We're talking magic, circles of power with John Michael Greer. We're going to take your phone calls, your questions, and your stories. If you've used magic, check in with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with John Michael Greer. We'll get to your calls in a second, questions, stories as well. I remember when I was a kid, Michael, fascinated with magic and what you could do with it.
Oh, a lot of people are.
My gosh, I loved it. I don't know if it was the Disney movies that got me into it or what, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's back around the time that that you and I were young, it was a lot more open in those days to things like that. You literally had books on that in public libraries. Nowadays, much less so, of course. People have gotten very, very edgy on the subject. Oh, well.
Well, no, that is absolutely true. And gosh, I used to remember wanting to do little spells and do little things, you know, make sure that I did well playing baseball today and stuff like that. Why does it work for some people, spells?
You know, that's a really complicated question. And the most important answer I think I can say is we really don't know. But that doesn't mean it doesn't work. That means just we may not be quite smart enough to figure out why. Of course, it's not as though there's been a lot of research into the subject. But just as you know, apples fell from trees long before Isaac Newton figured out why they did so. Magic works, and it's purely a matter of, well, let's try to work out a model that will allow us to make sense of the ways it works and the way it doesn't work. Because, I mean, like everything, nothing is omnipotent. Nothing will work in every possible circumstance. And just as, you know, bridges sometimes fall down and airplanes, you know, drop out of the sky on occasion, not every magical spell works. It's just one of those things.
Well, that's the best way to do it, to be sure. You have dealt with all kinds of issues of magic. Has there been anything that really scared you or concerned you?
The scariest thing in magic is dealing with your own business, actually facing yourself, realizing the things that are going on in your life that you thought were this person's fault or that person's fault or society's fault or what have you. You're doing it to yourself. That's really upsetting. You know, it's upsetting for all of us. And it's true of all of us, and that's one of the reasons it's so upsetting. That, you know, and that's something you have to deal with in this kind of thing. If you don't, you end up where Aleister Crowley did. So that was the part that's the part that really makes it challenging. Since I don't do evil magic, I haven't had to deal with the backlash from that. I'm sure if I had, I would have some ugly stories there. But I had the great good fortune to have some teachers early on who explained to me exactly why you don't do evil magic. And I watched some other people who didn't learn those lessons crash and burn in various colorful ways and just went, you know, I don't want to go there. I'm not going to do this. And things have just kind of worked out well for me.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. East of the Rockies to start. Stuart in Bloomington, Indiana with us. Stuart, thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, George.
Sure.
Hello, John. Good evening.
Hello.
I was just wondering, you know, I'm of the opinion that really magic is really unexplained science. If you go to, like the jungles and you take, say, a mirror, they may think of that as magic to them. But what do you think of the powers of the mind? In your case, he says the mind is the builder. And what we could do with the mind is really unexplained to a lot of people. But we call it magic. Is it possible that it's just unexplained science, not John?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, science is just a term for those things that where we figured out why it works and we've been able to reduce it to rules. And our society has this thing about materialism. We want our science to be material. So we're really good at machines. We're really good at chemistry. We're good at all kinds of things that have to do with matter. But when it comes to the mind, we trip over our own feet and land flat on our nose. Our scientists back away from it. We're not good at that yet. There have been other societies, ancient Egypt is an example, where they paid much more attention to the mind, and they got really good at that. So you're right that magic is science that we haven't gotten to yet. It's science that scientists haven't been willing to study yet. And because that's supernatural, I'm not going to deal with it. You know how that goes.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's definitely one very useful way to think about it.
Thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome, indeed. Next up, we go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Hi, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George and Mr. Greer.
Hi there.
Yes, I once read a very interesting book entitled Myth of the Magi by Mr. E.M. Butler. He wrote about all of the great magicians throughout history, like Simon Magus, Apollonia, Solomon, Moses, Jesus, Rasputin, Helen Blavatsky, and many others. I was intrigued and fascinated by these magicians of ancient times, and even after reading this book, found, you know, myself daydreaming of being in each one of their different realms, you know, and no matter how brief the fantasy was, a mentalistic journey. But my question is this, Mr. Greer, what is the difference between magic spelled M-A-G-I-C and magic M-A-G-I-C-K? Okay, and just okay, whatever became of the grand magicians, like the ones I previously mentioned earlier, and why haven't similar magis ever returned in one form or another in our modern times? And I'm not talking about the Houdini or Penn and Teller types, and I'll take the answer.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I get real mages. I get that. Okay, first of all, the magic with a K. Now, there's a Monty Python joke waiting in there. We'll let that go for
here it comes.
But magic with a K, that was an invention of Aleister Crowley, who we discussed a little while ago. He wanted to draw a distinction between stage magic and real magic, and he thought tacking a K on the end of it would make a good brand name for him. You know, some people use it, some people don't. I really don't. I don't. There was a while back in the 90s where everybody was spelling magic different ways and just various bizarre spellings. With regard to the great magi of the past, remember that in the past people who practiced magic got some respect for it. These days, people who practice magic don't. I've met some people who are serious magi, who, if they lived in a society that respected magic, they'd be just as famous as Simon Magus. They'd be just as famous as Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. But they live in our modern materialistic society where everyone goes, oh, that magic stuff, it's complete nonsense, and goes back to watching the television. And so nobody notices them. Nobody's aware of them. And it just kind of, they just kind of go unnoticed. They're still out there. They're still doing their stuff. They're still teaching and practicing magic. You just don't hear about them because the publicity of our society is focused on other people. We'd much rather talk about whoever the Kardashians or something like that than about these people who have accomplished great things with magic.
So, and talking about magic, let's talk about Madame Blavatsky for a moment.
Blavatsky, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Oh, she was a colorful one.
Was she a magician, a witch? Well, who was she?
She was an occultist. She probably practiced magic at some point, but we don't know a lot about her career because she didn't talk much about a lot of the earlier part of it. We know that she showed up in New York State, got off the boat, I think, sometime in the early 1870s, was in at the founding of the Theosophical Society, which was the first organization in the Western world to teach occultism publicly. And, you know, it was the same year Eliphas Levy died. And she quoted Levy a lot in her books. But she was an occultist. She was out to teach the basics of occult wisdom to the modern world, and her books, The Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled, were very, very popular back in their day. Not a lot of people read them these days, they're kinda long. But they're interesting stuff.
Good lady, good person.
Nobody's really sure. Again, we don't know what she was like in her youth. There are rumors that she had quite a wild life, but there are other claims that she went to Tibet and studied with mystics and this kind of stuff. The people who knew her in her in her later years when she was a teacher and so on, they loved her. They really thought she was a neat person. So yeah, probably.
Next up, we have Tyler in Missouri. Welcome to the show, Tyler. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
I see that you already kind of answered my question. Other authors that were from that era that their works are already in public domain. Are there any other suggestions?
There's a lot of stuff in the public domain at this point. Remember that basically everything before, what would it be now, 1937 or thereabouts? Is currently public domain. There was a lot of magical work done. Starting in the 1850s, you'd want to look at the writings of Paul Christian. you'd want to look at anything you can get by Papus. His actual name was Gerard Caus, but P-A-P-U-S is the spelling. He was a Frenchman. The writings by the original founders of the Golden Dawn, William Wynne Westcott and G.S.L. Mathers, are well worth finding. And obviously Blavatsky is a major figure to follow. And let's see, Annie Besant, who was her successor in there. There are dozens of them.
Edgar Casey, we called him the American prophet, but did he dabble with this at all?
Edgar Casey was an interesting cat. He was a visionary. He was one of these people who just has the talent naturally. And he doesn't seem to have done much in the way of occult study. In fact, he was a very devout Christian who read the Bible cover to cover once every year and taught Sunday school. Most people don't know that about him. But he, as far as I know, he didn't really deal with occultism that much. He simply, you know, he led his own very active spiritual life, and he had this visionary gift that enabled him to help people by you know, figuring out how to treat their diseases and things.
Now, the Nazis were into the occult in a big way. How come?
The whole Nazi phenomenon came out of occultism, came out of the nasty end of the occult movement. You had people in Central Europe starting in the 1880s, 1890s, who really started to get into this racist, anti-Semitic business. And they were interested in occultism. They were into the runes. They were into this kind of these certain kinds of occult practices. And Adolf Hitler grew up in the middle of that. When he was a dropout on the streets of Vienna, he would read this kind of literature all the time. And what became the Nazi Party, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, was actually founded by a magical secret society, the Thule Gesellschaft, or Thule Society, in 1919. So there was this whole network of people who were engaged in nasty magic of various kinds, and who were looking for a front guy. They were looking for somebody who they could organize around, and you know, here comes this decorated Austrian war vet named Adolf Hitler, who was interested in magic. And so they piled into it. If you read things by Dion Fortune, who I mentioned earlier, who was a very important English magician of the middle years of the 20th century, she was active straight through the war. And she was actually very heavily involved in organizing the English occult community, the British occult community, and some other parts of Western Europe to put a magical dimension into the defense of Britain against the Nazis. And she was very clear about this. Look, you know, there's Hitler. There's this circle of people around him and behind him for whom he is basically the front man. And then there's the big political movement that we call the Nazi Party, most of whom are completely clueless. But notice what happened. The Nazis did not found a thousand-year Reich. They did not win. They defeated themselves very effectively. They crashed and burned, you know, the 13-year Reich. So once again, nasty magic always blows up in your face. That's one of the very good lessons to learn from what happened with Adolf Hitler et al.
Were there many Americans that dabbled in this kind of magic?
Which kind? The Nazi kind?
I would call the evil kind.
Evil? Oh, where you have magic, you have people who run off the rails into evil magic. It's just one of those things. There were, between the wars, there were a number of significant American occultists who got into something very like what Hitler was doing over in Germany. There's a guy named William Dudley Pelley, who you never hear about these days. He was a big name between the wars. He ended up doing time in a club fed because he was very much in support of the Germans and opposed to the British. But, there were people doing that. There were a lot more who were fighting against it. There were a lot of the great majority of American occultists. Once it became clear what was going on in Germany, they rallied against it. They did a lot of work on the war effort on their side, as well as in the physical end of things.
Let's go to Annie in Alabama. Annie, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hello. How many types of magic are there? Do you practice white magic, black magic, or another kind of magic? And can you use any kind of scriptural magic that's not sorcery? Is it sorcery you practice? And if it's not unscriptural, can you use some kind of magic to make me well when doctors have told me they can't make me well?
Well, now the most important thing to remember, Annie, if you're when it comes to magic, the most powerful magic is the magic you do for yourself. And right. What I would encourage you to do, especially if you want to do white magic, if you want to do scriptural magic, that's good. That's a really good thing to do, and I recommend it. You can find online, I don't have one right with me, or to suggest something, you can find online lists of which of the Psalms out of the Bible are good for which different purposes, because each Psalm, you can pray that, and that Psalm will help you focus energy magically onto some kind of positive goal. If your health is suffering, yeah, you need to, and you want to use scriptural magic, you want to use the white magic, the magic of Jesus, you can certainly do that. And so you'll want to find the magic of the Psalms is a very old traditional way of doing that, and you might want to consider that.
How many different spells are there out there, magical spells? Hundreds? Thousands?
More than anyone will ever be able to count, much less learn. Remember, people have been practicing magic since before the beginning of history. Even in the English-speaking world, which is, of course, a tiny fraction of the world, no one person could possibly learn all the spells there are.
We had a friend, she's no longer with us, a white witch, Evelyn Paglini, who swears by candles in spells. Do you?
Oh, candle magic. Yeah, that's very traditional.
And how does that work?
Well, remember again, magic works through the mind. So you take a candle. Let's say you're going to do the standard variety of candle magic. We'll take Annie as an example here, because what she's doing is trying to work on healing herself through magic. That's very traditional, it's very appropriate, obviously. It's good magic. Okay. So you take a white candle and you dress it with an appropriate oil. You can get from various magical shops the healing oil, let's say. You're going to rub the candle with the oil, starting from the center, going outward to both ends. Why we do that, nobody knows, but that's the tradition. Then you light the candle, and while the candle burns, you're going to do this for like 7 days or 9 days, depending how long the candle goes. You light the candle, and you repeat one of the Psalms that's good for healing. You're going to repeat that 3 times. And then you snuff the candle. And then you come back and you do it again the next day, and the next day, and the next day, over and over again until the candle's burnt all the way down. And this is a very simple kind of magic, but it can be really effective because it concentrates all of the deeper levels of your mind on your goal of healing.
You're good at this stuff, John.
I've been doing it for what? Getting on for 40 years now, since I was a teenager.
That's a long time. And the blog, of course, you've still got that going, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to link that up at coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook and follow us on Twitter, sending out messages all the time. But we're going to come back in just a moment and take final phone calls. So those of you on hold, just hang where you are. Those of you calling, we'll get to you. Stories about magic or questions. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to our final segment with John Michael Greer, Circles of Power. Where do we get your book, John?
You can get most of my books at any full-service bookstore or your favorite online source.
You enjoy writing books. If you've got 50-plus books out there, really enjoy books.
It's the best job I've ever... It's the only job I've ever had that I could stand.
And you keep going.
If you're a writer, you can't... unless you're J.K. Rowling, you can't just sit back and collect royalties. You got to keep on getting out.
The one we talked about in 2011, was that the Apocalypse Now about the 2012?
That was Apocalypse Not.
Not.
I know 2011. Remember that was everyone was getting ready for something big to happen.
Uh-huh.
2012. Guess what?
Didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And 15 minutes of unprejudiced research into what would the Mayan calendar would have shown everyone that magic is not about believing whatever you want. It's not about convincing yourself that the world is going to pat you on the head and bail you out from your troubles. There's a lot of work involved, but it does pay off.
Is there anything, at least perception-wise, that there's something wrong with magic in practicing this?
Oh, sure. The thing is, there's a perception, and it's very heavily marketed. The thing is, if you practice magic, if you're a magician, you don't have to depend on anybody.
You don't have to run to this expert or that expert or the other expert, whether it's a religious expert, a scientific expert, a political figure. You don't depend on them. You depend on yourself. And so all the experts, all the people who want you to depend on them are going to, no, 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 you shouldn't do magic. It's bad because it means we can't charge you money. Mages are independent. They just stand by themselves on their own two feet, and that's a dangerous thing to do in a society that's basically dedicated to making people dependent, making people just do what they're told.
All right, let's go back to the phones. First-time caller Josh is with us, Medford, Oregon. Hello, hello Josh. Josh. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Josh. Thank you.
Pretty well. Hey. So I had a question. Years back, I met a guy who claimed to be an ex-Masonic magician. Mm-hmm. And we got in a really deep conversation about magic. And one point he said to me, well, magic's in everything. And even if you don't believe in it, it doesn't matter because it affects everyone and everything. And he gave me an example. He said, take like a dollar bill, for example. All over this thing, there are symbols hidden all over this bill. And he goes, these symbols are like low-level magic. And he goes, let me ask you, if I gave you a piece of paper with magic symbols on it, and I said, I want you to give that piece of paper to another person, and then instruct that person to do the same on, and the more people that hand this around, the stronger my spell would become. He said, would you do it? And I said, no, probably not. He goes, and yet you do. And yet we all do. And I always thought that was an amazing example of like a low-level kind of a background magic thing, and I was curious if you'd heard that before or if you know anything more about that.
Oh, yeah. No, the thing is, he's absolutely right. I don't know what, ex-Masonic magician. I'm sorry to hear you left the craft. But, yeah, the thing is that this one very important part of magic is the use of symbols and the fact that, your dollar bill has symbols on it that are designed to do magic for the benefit of the United States of America. That's why they're there. Okay? Most countries do that. Why do you think the Queen's on every piece of English money? She's kind of the talisman. She's the focus of that. And so people use money, as they use lots of other things, as a focus for emotions, as a focus for consciousness, as a way to direct consciousness in various ways. We are surrounded by magic at every moment. In fact, all of us practice magic all the time. The point of learning magic is to do it competently so you achieve what you want to, rather than doing it incompetently and achieving what other people want you to, which may not be for your own benefit.
Let's go out to Jackie now in West Los Angeles, California. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can.
We can hear just fine. Go ahead.
So I moved into this apartment building maybe 6 months ago, and the neighbors have been driving me crazy, really crazy. Mm-hmm. And so I did a spell, and it's called a hot foot spell. Have you ever heard of that? Where they move, makes them move.
You wanted them just out of there.
I wanted them out of there. And so there's a spell it's called the hot foot spell. You put all these ears together and you make sure that they walk by it and walk over it. And so the landlord called me and said that the lady upstairs thinks I put a hex on her because she found herbs and stuff.
Well, you did. She was right.
And I went, are you kidding me? What is she, crazy? So then I thought, oh, God, I can see it now. I'm going to be going to court for being a witch from my landlord wanting to kick me out because...
Did they move out?
No, they didn't.
Ah.
It got worse.
One of the problems with using spells like that is you never know if the other person's going to use something. And the fact that your neighbor figured out right away that you put a whammy on her suggests, she knew. She might be better at it than you are.
She has really heavy ESP with me, so it's like I'm even thinking about things. And, well,
This backfired on you, Jackie.
And the thing is, I understand the neighbors are driving you crazy, but you need to start and say, okay, why are they driving me crazy? What emotional issues of my own are they stirring up? And maybe there's a way to deal with that other than just trying to chase them out of their home.
Is it evil, John, to do that kind of a spell?
No, the thing is, that's not necessarily an evil spell, but it can be. It's not necessarily the best approach because, again, in a world where lots of people know magic, that kind of thing can backfire.
It did backfire,
and that's the thing. If you're gonna engage in that kind of casual magic, you mostly want to do. In fact, you want to do across the board helpful stuff. You want to do, you know, instead of trying to do a hot fist spell to chase them out of there, do a sweetening spell. Okay, those are also very, very traditional to make the relationship, to make your relationship with your neighbors be sweeter, to make it go better. Okay, instead of saying get rid of them, how can you improve the situation? How can you make everybody happy with it? If you approach it that way, you're not going to get a backlash because everyone's going to be happy. Okay,
turn them into gingerbread.
We
don't do
watching
that.
Too much Harry Potter.
Michael's with us in Columbia, South Carolina. Thanks for holding, Michael. Go ahead.
How are you doing tonight?
All right.
I'm a retired police officer. I want to let you know you got me through many a midnight.
Well, and thank you for serving.
Yeah. And just more or less comment. A couple weeks ago, you, I think it was a female guest, you were talking about Uri Geller.
Mm-hmm.
And I read in a book called Science, Good, Bad, and Bogus. Science, Good, Bad, and Bogus. I cannot remember the author's name, but he made mention that Uri Geller would never allow a professional magician around him. And that Blackstone, David Copperfield, and all these other big-name magicians.
He did not like James Randi.
Yeah, the Amazing Randi.
Right.
Well, but from what I understand from this book, that he wouldn't allow any professional magicians around him, and that all these professional magicians easily replicated his whatever you want to call it.
Many of them did. I know Geller. He's been on the program before, Michael, and he seems to be very authentic with us. You might remember the Johnny Carson time when he was on and he couldn't do the spoon bending. He basically could not do it, but I think he's the real deal. There's some kind of energy force about him. Yes, magicians duplicate a lot of things he does with trickery, but I don't think he does that.
Well, the thing to keep in mind here is that just because somebody can fake something doesn't mean that everyone's faking it. Just because there are counterfeit bills in circulation doesn't mean that all money is counterfeit. And so this is one of the things that a lot of the professional skeptics miss or ignore, frankly, is that, you know, just because person A is faking it doesn't mean everyone's faking
right.
it.
I've got a skeptic on this week as a guest coming up, John.
Yeah.
And
there you go.
I put them on because I want to get the other side. But
absolutely.
But they generally just don't believe anything.
No. The thing is, they're true believers in their own way. They believe in rationality. They believe in materialism. They believe in progress. And they believe in these things as rigidly and dogmatically as any medieval peasant believed in, you know, in, mm-hmm. in his religion.
I'm not sure they even believe in God.
No, they generally don't. Because most of the skeptics I know, they worship human beings. They have this idea that we're going to head for the stars, we're going to bestride the cosmos and all this kind of stuff. And that's their God. Progress is their God. Reason is their God.
Let's go back now to the calls. Hitchcock, Texas. Hello, Alice.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi.
Thank you for receiving my call. I met this guy, like, unusual way.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong number, and he came down to see me. I wanted to know, he started angry with me. I want to know, how can I use magic to make it, to get him to be friends again?
So he called you. It was a wrong number, but you guys hit it off, I guess.
Right.
And then you invited him over or something?
I invited him over.
Okay. Right. And you've been friends before?
No, this is my first time meeting by
him. Have you met him yet?
I met him, and he acted real nice.
And then he turned on you.
Talk on the phone, and
oh,
told me not to call him, to make him call me.
Oh, boy. And he, now he knows where you live.
Some kind of way. Mm. And also, I would like to know how I can get my money. It's from asbestos to start coming tomorrow.
All right. She needs money. How does she get that? Through magic. But as far as the guy, I wouldn't give him the address, but that may be too late.
The address in that kind of situation. But now, hear it again. This is one of those things. It depends very much on what kind of magic you want to do and what your personal beliefs are. If you prefer to do scriptural magic, like the kind we were talking with Alice, again, there are psalms that you can pray to get yourself out of financial trouble. One thing to watch out for, though, don't focus on the idea that you're going to get money for nothing. If you do that, I promise you it's going to blow up in your face. Because there again, if for you to get money you didn't earn, someone else has to earn money and not get it. And that's just
nothing comes for free.
Nothing comes for free.
Except they did say the best things in life are free.
Yeah, but money is not one of them.
No, that's true.
Money is not one of the best things in life. And so the trick here is to look at the situation and say, okay, here is a need that I have. I need to get, you know, X or Y or Z. Don't focus on the money. Focus on the thing that you want in your life and work on the magic and do it saying, I want to achieve this thing and I want to achieve it in a way that does not hurt anybody. Nobody's harmed. Nothing is taken away from anybody. This is my goal here. I will achieve that. And if you approach it that way, using, again, any of these various magical systems, and it'll take you some practice and so on, but you can achieve these things. You can achieve an astonishing amount as long as you're willing to approach it in a way that doesn't harm people and a way that, where you're not trying to will two contradictory things at once.
And what do you think about putting a number 8 in your wallet or purse for riches?
That's an old traditional one.
That works.
Okay, the thing is, all of these things will have some effect. It depends. Basically, magic starts with really simple things like that and gradually works up. And the further you go, the more intensive the practices, the more intensive the rituals, the more work you want to put into it, the greater effect you're going to get. But you can certainly start out with these very simple things if you want to and experiment with them. Get yourself to the point you're going, well, that actually worked.
Have you ever seen, John, or come across a evil person, a bad person, who practices this kind of magic?
Oh, yeah. Again, they crash and burn messily, but in the meantime, they can hurt some people.
Is that their intent? Is that what they want to do?
It depends on the person. Again, remember, people are a mixed bag. Some people who end up doing evil magic, they want this, that, and the other, and they don't care who gets hurt. Some people actually want to hurt other people. They have, for whatever reason, they've got that tweak in their psyches. They get off on hurting people, so they want to hurt people. And there are various other things. Some people are just really messed up. Remember I was talking earlier about the raspberry jam law. You can't bring magical energies into manifestation except by bringing them through yourself. And if you're bringing energies to hurt someone, zap them, those same energies are going to affect your life. And they are going to mess you over 6 ways from Sunday.
John, as we wrap it up, give out your quick blog, if you would, real fast.
Okay.
And the name of the book is Circles of Power.
Yeah, that's one of the books.
The other one of the 50.
Again, is Doctrine and Ritual of High Magic by L.F. Levy, translated by me and Mark Miketuk. Circles of Power is also being reprinted, and that's a new one out. I've got lots of stuff out there. Look up my name, John Michael Greer, on your favorite online bookstore. You will get anything. My blog is galabes.blogspot.com. That's galabes.blogspot.com. There will be a new one coming out, a new blog actually being launched a couple months from now. But if you follow Galabes, you'll get all of them.
And thank goodness we have a link at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.